Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk, episode number 30, and I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey. Today, we have Scott Bennett on the show with us today. Scott is the head strength coach at Radford University. He is, he's been in the field for 20 plus years, been the head strength coach at Marshall, Wyoming, Southern Miss. He's worked at Virginia Tech and James Madison. He's had a well-rounded experience, and he's now at Radford University. And so today we talk a little bit about his experience that's led to his opportunity here at Radford, being at a smaller institution, and how he's able to manage the teams that he has, along with facility constraints and budgetary constraints and things along those lines. And so I think it's a very good episode for those coaches that maybe aren't at the LSUs and the Tennessees and the pro level and things along those lines, where you have to make a lot with a little, you know. So sit back and enjoy this episode. Before we get started, I want to make sure that we recognize Play Sports Performance Flooring as the sponsor of the show. They continue to help me bring this to you for free. Their latest install here is Cal State Fullerton. And again, I'm very partial. At Tennessee, we put in the inlaid platforms with the wood inserts, and that's what they're doing here at Cal State Fullerton. And I think it just looks great. So if you're in the market for sports flooring, indoor turf, track, those types of things, make sure you reach out to Play Performance Sports Flooring. And if you haven't liked their Facebook page, as I always say, it's just great to see other facilities and what people are doing. So go to their Facebook page and like them there. So sit back and enjoy this episode. I know you're going to get something out of it, and I'll see you on the flip side. All right, guys. I met this guy that you're staring at about, probably 12 years ago maybe now?
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, we were speaking at a conference, Matt Bayless' conference up at Utah, Rocky Mountain something or another. And, I'm a young strength coach, young head strength coach, and we're coming off an 8-win season. And I'm sitting in the car, and I'm upset because we didn't make a bowl, but we had an 8-win season. And Scott Bennett is at Wyoming at the time, and he's sitting there going, "Shut up, young freaking whippersnapper! You know, 8 wins is 8 wins." And I've never forgotten that. And but Scott Bennett has been a huge friend of me, a mentor throughout my career, and I'm glad to have him on the show. Thanks, man.
Appreciate you having me, brother. It must be a slow news day to scrape up the bottom of the barrel here.
No, not at all, brother. Well, hey, man. Won't you go into your journal? I did a little bit off camera here, but won't you go into your journal? Tell us where you've been and how you got to your current position.
Well, for a long time, I really considered myself one of the luckiest guys in the profession. When I was really, really young, I mean fourth grade young, a guy named Johnny Parker coached at my little school, and my school was not a high school. It was a K-12, 350 people school. And my grandmother at the time had a house that was too big for her to handle, and she would rent rooms to people in town, and whether it was highway patrolmen, teachers, coaches, and Johnny lived in my grandmother's house, and that's how I got to know Johnny Parker.
Wow.
And that was before Lee Corso ever hired him at Indiana. In fact, he left our hometown to go to be the strength coach at Indiana, and I spent a week one summer and a spring break at Indiana in Bloomington with Johnny, watching those guys train. When I was, I didn't even know what training was. I just knew those guys were football players and they were running and lifting, and I liked what I was seeing. Right. And then, being from a small town like me, I wasn't big enough to play college football. My dad was a huge Ole Miss fan, so it was Ole Miss or the Army. And I opted to go to Ole Miss. And, I couldn't find my way in school, and somebody finally said, he said, "Well, what do you like to do?" I said, "Well, I like to lift weights, and I like to coach." They said, "Well, why don't you be a strength coach?" I said, "Well, never thought about it, but I guess I could." I had a class at Ole Miss with a handicapped guy, and Dean was working in the Ole Miss weight room with Chuck Oakey, and I said, "If old Dino can do it, I can do it too. See if he needs any more help." And he said, "Yeah, needs all the help he can get." So I went and talked to Coach Oakey, and I tagged on as an intern, ended up being a GA, and during that time, I interviewed for a job as a graduate assistant at Clemson University with Gary Wade, And that was in 1989, 1990, and that was my first break into what was at that time the big time. You know, that was that was really the explosion at that time of the Taj Mahal weight rooms. You know, I remember walking in there thinking this thing's 11,000 square feet and got carpet in it and ceiling fans, and it was the state of the art at the time. And I went there to be a strength coach, you know, not to get a master's, but I ended up getting a master's in guidance and counseling while I was there, and worked for a great guy. Gary was tough on us. He was tough on us, but I tell you what, you know, when we were there, you know, it was back in the day when, you know, money was no object.
Right.
But he taught us how to do things as if we had no money, because he knew when we left those jobs, we weren't going to go be the head strength coach at Nebraska or Florida. You know, we were going to go, you know, like John Sauer, William and Mary, or Joey Batson goes to Bowling Green, or, you know, Jeff Hurd goes to Western Michigan. So he taught us how to do things and be creative without having, you know, the big budget, and that was huge.
Right.
A lot about, you know, how to treat the scouts when they came in. You know, we had some big-time players there back in the day with Chester McLaughlin and Wayne Simmons and LaVon Kirkland and a bunch of those guys. So he taught us that stuff. I left there after my master's and got to work for Mike Gentry for 3 years. And Mike really taught me how to coach. He taught me the value of, you know, trying new things, trying new programs, and trying them out on your own so you could explain to the athlete what it felt like to you when you did it. Mm-hmm. And that was the connection. You know, the other thing that Mike taught me that was great was, you know, be firm but fair. And I thought that was a really big thing. And that set me up. You know, that was at Virginia Tech. They just come off of, I think, a two-win season, two or three-win season. And that year I got there, this is why I say I'm lucky, because I didn't have anything to do with it, is when they took off and went to their first bowl game and just kept growing. We beat Texas in the Sugar Bowl, and I got, you know, when you're hot, you're hot. Mm-hmm. That was the same year that Jim Donnan left Marshall to go to Georgia, and I ended up being Bob Pruitt's strength coach at Marshall for 2 years. And that was a very difficult job. In that we had a lot of players, we brought in a lot of props, and it was just me and a GA, and it was a tough deal. My athletic director left and went way out to Wyoming. He hired me out there. I had a bigger staff, bigger budget. You know, he just in Laramie, Wyoming. That was a challenge.
Right.
Went through a lot of coaches out there, a lot of changes. But the part about those changes, I thought it was good, was it taught you how to be a pro. You know, we've talked about, you know, being inherited. I've been inherited, I was inherited, or Dana Dimble inherited me, but, you know, the AD hired me, and Dana was going to go along with it, and thank goodness we did. And then Vic Koning inherited me, and then Joe Glenn inherited me. So that was three coaches right there that I had to, you know, you got to prove yourself to year after year, because you can't prove yourself to a coach in 6 weeks.
Right.
You know, it's like farming. It takes a long time to get the seed in the ground and cultivate it and get the fruits out. And it worked out okay.
And it's frustrating having to do it multiple times.
Yeah, it really was. And with the same players.
Right.
You know, with the same kids. And that was the thing that I learned there. You know, if you invest in the kids, you don't worry about all the other stuff. That's the key. Because, you know, through all the transitions, the kids are going to be there. And they're the bread and butter. And that's why we're there. And then I had an opportunity to get back home to Mississippi at Southern Miss with Coach Bauer. Which I thought, you know, that to me was one of the highlights of my career. I mean, we're talking about, in my mind, a Hall of Fame guy. You know, Jeff Bauer at Southern Miss, that was a staple on ESPN for a long time. Yep. I thought, that's a great deal. We go down there for a year, and, you know, something got sideways, and they let Jeff go, and they brought Coach Fedora in, which was a big change for, you know, what Coach Bauer wanted out of his players and what Coach Fedora wanted out of his players were light and day – or night and day difference. We had to make a big change, and I won't say it was a painful transition, but it was tough in that, you know, Larry knew what he wanted, and he knew the way he wanted it, and Larry's all gas and no brake now. It's go, 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 and it took us a while to figure out what Larry really wanted.
Right.
Sure. After a couple of years, we had it figured out, and we had it going, and it was a good deal. You know, and then some things happened to me personally that I needed to make some changes. And, you know, you and I were going to work together for a while. And then that Army thing, they asked me to go to Georgia and do some stuff. Before I could ever get there, I got a call from Marshall, and ended up that was a bad situation for me and everybody involved. And
yep.
Then I was out of it for a couple months. And then our old buddy Greg Werner basically rescued my career, let me come work for him up at JMU. And that got me back into this area of the country where I, I loved my time at Virginia Tech and the people in the area down here, and made some contacts that were here at Radford. And when Shue left, they called me up and said, "Hey, we got a job for you if you want it."
Right.
So I've landed here, and it's, you know, I've been out of football for a couple, 2 or 3 years. It's a whole lot different, but the one thing that's still there is there are kids that want to work, there are kids that want to win, and we're here to help them, and that's what we do.
No doubt. Well, you know, you've been through that experience. You said, you've mentioned you were at Clemson with Taj Mahal, and Wyoming had a nice facility, mm-hmm. and you know, it was, even you built a facility at Southern Miss. You know,
Yeah. Coming
to a place like Radford now, where you're at now, you know, where maybe the facilities aren't those types of facilities, mm-hmm. or the budget isn't that type of budget. What are some of the biggest challenges, and how have you addressed those types of things at, say, Radford?
You know, luckily here, our facility size-wise is okay. It's an old gymnastics room, and, you know, our office right here is three of us in what was the old storage closet.
Right.
So we don't have staff meetings. We're right on top of each other. You know, the hardest part really for us, and it was, you know, back in my day at Virginia Tech, we had a very small room, and we had more sports, and it seemed like we got more people through there with less pain than we can do now. But the difference there at that time was there were so many more class sections, mm-hmm. that they had to choose from so they could make their schedule work out. That seems to be the biggest thing now with all universities, is they've cut the sections of the classes down where there's not as many options. So we've got to get more team times in, more group times in. And when you're working early in the day and you got a lull, and then you work late in the day, you know, those 12, 13-hour days, somebody's not getting your best shot after about that 10th hour.
Sure.
That's the biggest challenge, is trying to get all the teams in at one time, because everybody wants that team time. You know how it is. It's a different buzz. You break them up into groups. We broke our basketball team up into groups this summer and this fall, and it worked out well because we had some physical things that I had to address. I could get my hands on that a lot better. But every Friday we came in early as a team, and you get that back. But that's the biggest thing, is getting everybody in here when they want to get in,
right.
As a group, when you're just, you know, you've got limited time slots, because everybody, you know, you got basically from, you know, 6 in the morning till 8, and then you got maybe 2 in the afternoon till late, and then you got to come back and do it again the next day. That's the biggest thing. Budget-wise, you just find a way to make it work. You just,
right.
you maybe prioritize, you know, 5 things you want to get to add to your program, you know, over time. You attack the first one, and then maybe you add to a, you know, maybe buy a couple of new plates instead of a whole new set.
Sure.
You just got to you reset your time frame a little bit. But other than that, it's, you're coaching kids, and you know, gravity still works, so we lift weights and go.
So now, when you have, say, a women's soccer coach wants 3 o'clock, and then the men's basketball coach wants 3 o'clock, and the baseball team wants 3 o'clock. How do you settle that score?
You know, luckily, Robert Lindenberg, our athletic director, has addressed that with a lot of teams, because our basketball arena is just it's a huge venue that's sectioned off.
Mm-hmm.
We've got our game floor, and then behind the game floor, we've got our volleyball practice court. And, you know, he already tells the coaches that if you're not willing to share, this is not the place for you to come.
Right.
So our coaches all have that mentality. I take on, it used to be back in the day, I would prioritize the off-season team, because they were, it was usually football, because they were reciprocating with, you know, they would put their emphasis on our area, you know. In the in-season teams, you know, they might cancel a day, something might happen and it wouldn't show, so I would give them less of a prime spot. Now I've flipped it. I give our in-season teams the priority, because their practice times are set, their facility time is set, and we, you know, our off-season teams work early in the day,
mm-hmm.
because we can get a big group in, we can get them knocked out, and we don't have to worry about any, you know, changes in the schedule or, you know, study hall changing or any of that kind of stuff. But luckily, all of our coaches work pretty well with it, and they understand. You know, sometimes we may have 2 teams in here at the same time,
right?
And they just understand it's going to get a little crowded. And luckily, you know, we don't have anybody raising too much sand about being in with other teams. I try to make it to where, you know, if I have a team start at 2:15 and I know I got another one coming in at 3, I'll make sure my 2:15 team has kind of gotten all their, you know, majority of their major lifts done. We're getting into, you know, maybe some joint stability or getting into our core work or something where the other team coming in at three can have the platforms and get on with the highlight of their lift, as we like to call it. So luckily we've got it worked out where everybody kind of shares and we're good on that end, but it gets a little hairy at times with teams coming in and out.
So you get there, and to be honest with you, I don't know much about the history of Radford's strength conditioning program, but I'm assuming – you know, that you want to put your stamp on it, you want to create your culture and maybe even change your culture. What were some of the things you did as a whole at a smaller institution as far as trying to create, hey, you know, that we're going to put a new stamp, we're going to create a new culture in this area?
Right. And you're exactly right. It's this program, in my mind, is still in its infancy in that, they just, as a university, didn't put a whole lot of emphasis on it. And that's changing with every coach that's been here. That's changed a little bit more and a little bit more. My thing is, with the different sports that we've got, you invest in them, and then they see the benefit from it, then they start to build your program for you.
Right.
You go back and say, you know, and we hear it year after year after year, especially in the college football world, you know, our off season is this, and that's where we got this done. Every other team's starting to do that now as well.
Sure.
So that really helps. We're doing a whole program review right now, department-wide, to see what our needs are, whether it's facility improvements, staff improvements, budget improvements. So we're undergoing that right now. You know, really the thing, is, as you well know, when you've got groups of people in here, you know, if our baseball team's in here at once, we got 35 people. Right. I can't watch 35 people.
Right.
Luckily, they've got a good work ethic and they work hard. And if we've got two or three interns in here, we still, you know, that's 10 or 11 people, maybe to one person. You're still almost more of a gym monitor than you really are a coach.
Right.
So that's something we've got to get better at. Something we've done an outreach across campus, and campus has reached back to really start a great academic intern type program where, you know, where we could, if it works out in the grand scheme of things, we could have an undergraduate practicum kid who piques an interest, turns into an internship, piques an interest, turns it into a master's situation. We could potentially have a kid in our program coach here for 4 years,
right?
Which would be great. You know, right now we've got volunteers, we've got a couple of interns for class credit, but where that's my next biggest step. And you have run a great intern program for a lot of years. You know the value of that. And if we can get that done, I think that'll be my the biggest thing I can leave on the program. You know, to me, as I call it, coaching the X's and O's is easy. Coaching kids and mentoring kids is where you can put your own personal touch on it. But being able to put together a team of interns and practicum kids and things like that to really help you turn the wrenches on the program, I think would be a good footprint to leave behind.
No doubt. So you get there, and I don't know if those staff members came with you right away, but you have a full-time and then kind of a part-time position, you know. When you're dealing with 17 sports and you're trying to create programs for 17 sports, you know, and you're trying to do it, you know, the Scott Bennett way, you know, what were some of the, I mean, I know you guys are on top of each other there in the office, but I mean, are you meeting regularly? Did you go through any kind of a training program for your staff? Are you reviewing their programs before they go out? Talk a little bit about that structure.
Yeah, you know, more than anything, I got in almost a year ago, really over just a little over a year ago this time of year. So everything was kind of in play at that time. So I let them get me up to speed on what had been done.
Right.
And at that point, I look and I say, you know, everything's done. You know, doing Olympic lifts early in the workouts. We're doing, you know, free weights, squatting. We're finding ways to get things done. You know, everything really programming wise was on point. And then they helped me to kind of understand the lay of the land on scheduling and how to go about doing things, what teams were proponents of our program, which ones, you know, were you know, maybe hit or miss. And then we, you know, like I said, we're all sitting, you know, Tim and I share a desk, and then Michelle's got her own desk. We just sometimes sit around and talk shop a little bit.
Right.
So really the conversation is our staff meeting or our in-service, more or less. And then we'll talk about some ideas, or I'll say, you know, something I learned in training some of our DBs was this. I'm going to put it to work with our volleyball team today. Watch how it goes and see if you like it.
Right.
So they can kind of see what I'm talking about and some of the things that I can bring to the table. And if they want to implement them, great. If not, you know, What you know, it's kind of it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of deal.
Right.
As far as programming was concerned, you know, the biggest thing that they helped me with was learning the complexion of the teams. As far as you know, our soccer team works this way. Our women's soccer team works this way. It kind of gave me a head start on that. You know, luckily, Ronnie, the teams here, we don't have a team that doesn't work.
Sure.
And that's, you know, that's a joy because, you know from doing football like I have for so many years, inside that one team, you got bigs, you got skills, you got, and you got kids that, you know.
No, you got your workers, you got your guys that you
got to. Yeah, you got guys that, you know, they wouldn't do a deep squat if you held them at gunpoint. So it's a different, but with our kids here, you know, they eat up anything you tell them and they go hard at it. So that gives us a chance to have a special deal here.
Right. So, you know, kind of summarize, you know, you have, you know, Coach Bennett's rules. You know, we're going to Olympic lift early in the workout. We're going to do some complex movements and then work into our, you have some rules that are in place. You kind of sat with them and talked about scheduling and kind of determined a schedule per se.
Right.
You know, and then you talk shop regularly. And then the thing that I thought was the most important there, and this is something that I've had to learn through my career, is that you valued their input.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's something that, you know, as a head strength coach, it's tough because you go in there and you want to freaking, it's my way or the highway. But you know what? If you put so many rules or you're such a dictatorship, that you miss out on a lot of great ideas and these are the guys, especially your young coaches, are the ones that are surfing YouTube and they're going to all the conferences and they're reading anything and everything that's coming out, you know. And as an administrator, you're boggled down sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I know that about you. That's one, you know, I kind of wanted to segue into it is, you know, as a master strength coach, as somebody that sits on the board of directors for the CSCCA, and spends a lot of time with the testing, you know, each year for certifications, you know, what are some of the recommendations you have for young coaches coming through, and not only for those coaches, but what are some recommendations you have for administrators right now to say, you know what, we need to make this a part of your training program is getting them certified by the CSCCA or doing this, you know, investing back into our people.
You know, in sitting through the testing for so long, the practical part of it, you know, each year the pool of candidates for certification gets better and better every year. So I think the mentor program there is really working well. And I'll go back to something that Joe Ken said a while back is, I still think we get into this habit or this comfort zone of information regurgitation.
Yep.
Our young coaches need to be able to hold a conversation with somebody about training, not just throw out what they've heard, what they've been told, what they think is right. You know, they don't have the golden ticket that you and I have of experience. We've seen how different things can and will work. They may or may not have, but they've been told, and they throw that answer out there. And I think that puts them at an advantage, A, that they have that. You know, when I was coming through, we didn't have all that. We learned by reading the journal. We learned by going to the conferences. We learned by – I remember sitting on the back porch with – this is how old I am – with a Sony Walkman listening to John Garhammer cassette tape getting ready for my certification exam. So this whole mentor thing is really good. But I think we need to be able to hold conversations about training.
Right.
And, you know, as far as young strength coaches, I think, you know, when I was coming up, you know, there was one way to do it, and that was the only way to do it, and boy, was I wrong.
Right.
Is find out, okay, you come in, you can evaluate your clientele, your team. Do we have a fitness problem? Do we have a strength problem? Do we have a flexibility problem? Which problem do we need to attack first? And when I reach into my tool chest, which tool do I need to pull out to address that? Mm-hmm. Instead of, let's go do cleans. Let's go do the Olympic lifts. Let's make sure we bar squat. Let's make sure we do this. You know, a lot of problems, physical malfunctions with some of my basketball guys. I've done less back squatting than I think I ever have in my whole career.
Right.
But we did a lot of single leg stuff because they could handle it. But I think being able to hold a conversation about training methods and modalities and how those training methods will fit into a need or fit into a void that you find into a program is our next step. You know, as far as athletic directors, I think they need to be aware, not necessarily at face value of the certifications that are out there,
right?
Because the certifications that are out there, for the most part, you know, the major hitters have got great certifications. I think the athletic directors and a lot of head coaches need to be made aware of some of the problems or potential problems that we as strength coaches face when we're on the front lines, you know, as far as the sudden death stuff, the sickling and the asthma and all that stuff that we've gotten a better handle on. I don't think they realized how big of an issue or potential problem that really was. We did what we called basically an in-service day here at Radford, where each unit got up and talked about, you know, what they would bring to the table. And our trainer and I did a co-presentation on all those things, you know, the asthma, sickle,
right,
cardiac stuff, and it got a lot of coaches' attention, and it got our athletic director's attention when it comes to, you know, the way Chad, our trainer, and I put together our emergency action plans. You know, again, you're talking about another unit in our department that's short-staffed.
Right.
And we talked about, you know, if we just got a workout going on, here's where the trainer would be. If we got, you know, an intense conditioning situation going on, we had to have a trainer there certified with AED and all those things. But I think as far as our athletic directors are concerned, they need to understand, you know, sometimes they just look at it as, well, that's the weight coach. They run that room down there, and, you know, I don't know what goes on down there, and blah, 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 blah. I think they need to understand that we're more than just, you know, decorating a room and putting in nice equipment and, you know, getting up early and staying late. That we do have some situations that, as a profession, as a scientific professional, that we have to address, that we do address, and that we take painful, meticulous care of to help prevent a possible situation, realizing that we just can't make it perfect.
Right. So you mentioned, you know, the sickle cell, and I know you sit on the, you know, you go to the committee, the safeguards committee,
right?
You're very active there. You're our representative as strength coaches for that committee. You know, this is something that you and I have, over beers, have had 2, 3, 4 hour conversations about. You know, I'm going to limit you to one, you know, kind of one response here. The biggest thing that, and I've stressed it on this show, is, you know, for us to affect change, you know, things that, you know, there's a lot of good that's happened in our profession. Tons of good. You guys are making $300,000, you know, $400,000 as a strength coach now. Didn't exist, you know, years ago. So there's positives, but there's also negatives. You know, we're quick to point out the negatives, you know, especially when it comes to the NCAA or institutions or our committees or our organizations. You know, we're quick to point out the negatives. What's the single most thing that we need to be doing if we disagree with, say, the CSECA, the direction that the board's going, or you know, how we're being presented to the NCAA, or those types of things? Point to one thing that we should be doing?
Increase professionalism. Because my first meeting with the NC2A safeguards committee was not great.
Right.
I mean, that there were a lot of people, and everybody's, well, they're Division II people, they're Division III, and they don't know what we do. Well, you're exactly right, because nobody's told them.
Right.
And until we started having these task force meetings dealing with the sudden death stuff, nobody really understood exactly what we did and how we went about doing it.
Fingers, too, if I remember correctly.
What's that?
So a lot of people in that room pointing fingers, too.
I'm telling you. And I'll be honest with you, the first time that Don Decker and I went, it was a bloodbath.
You mentioned professionalism. Now, okay, take that a step further. What are the action steps then?
The action steps are exactly what Tommy Moffitt said a couple weeks ago when I saw the show was, you know, go home to your own institution.
Okay.
Go home to your own university and promote your product, whether you're a 2 or 3 man show like I am here, or you got a team of 17 people on your staff. Promote that product as a positive. Communicate well. Have a great synergistic hand-in-glove relationship with your athletic trainers. I mean, you're building relationships there. You may not agree that your trainer holds about an extra week.
Right.
You may not agree that you may not agree that your trainer is accusing you of working somebody too hard. You don't have to agree with that. what you got to agree on is what's best for the welfare of that student athlete. And if the trainer will sign off on the fact that you're on board with the welfare of the student athlete, and your compliance director will sign off on that you're on board, you follow the rules, and you handle yourself in a very professional manner. You don't try to get over on anybody with supplements or extra rules or sneaking in a voluntary workout, that you're trying to do things on board. When the issues from the NC2A come across their desk, they already know where you stand because they stand beside you.
Right.
The NC2A is going to serve its membership. You know, and I've said this in a couple of business meetings at the CSCCA conference. You know, it's not like the NC2A is a situation where I go knock on the door and say, I'm a strength coach, I got a problem, somebody listen. That's not the case. The legislation that's passed is to serve members because that's what the membership wants. And by the membership, I'm saying institutions. You know, they say, we've got a problem, can you help us? They want to help you. They want to help the institutions. So if the institutions get on board with, you know, we got to make sure all our strength coaches are certified. We need that done. Then we got no problems. That's going to happen. If we say we need more time to work, you know, that's going to be a tough one because the NC2A is all about the freedom of the student athlete, making sure they're not being, you know, they know there's work to be put in.
Right.
They understand that wholeheartedly. You know, what they don't want to do is steal the collegiate experience from the kid.
Right.
And they don't want, you know, guys, you know, in our positions, overworking them. They want to make sure they've got some downtime. The biggest thing they look at on our end right now is they're really pushing a recovery factor. But the NC2A is going to serve its membership as long as it's going to serve the well-being of that student athlete. So we as strength coaches go home, and again, Tommy said it best, feather our own nest. Make friends at home. Make sure when the trainer goes out, or the compliance director goes out, or you know, your SWA goes out and say, our strength coach does an awesome job, and he says this is a problem, you know, maybe we ought to look at it. Then all of a sudden the ears perk up. You know, if we just go into a meeting and start griping and complaining about we don't have enough time, we, you know, supplements, the rule is bad, blah, blah, nobody wants to hear it.
Right.
But if you go home and you make a great product as far as what you're doing to serve the student athlete, you get on board with your athletic training staff and make sure you guys don't have to agree on everything, but make sure you got great relationships. They'll go to bat for you.
Right.
That's if it affects the welfare of the student athlete, there will be some significant change made.
Sure.
Whether it's to protect them from a strength coach overworking them, or whether it's to get them, you know, some more time in preparation, they'll work for the student athlete, but it's got to come. You know, and I've said this before too, the committee we're on that we fought so hard to have a voice on just gives recommendations. You know, and that, I mean, it's a loud voice, but we don't make legislation. We don't present we present recommendations, and then Division One has its way of doing business. Division Two has its way of doing business. Division Three has its way of doing business, and they're going to adapt what they need as per our recommendations. But it's a process.
Right.
But if the presidents, you know, the athletic directors, so forth, so on, even, you know, even the heavy hitter coaches say we need this, somebody's going to listen. But we've got to be professionals. You know, one of the stories I heard was about a drug test appeal. And the guy sitting across the table from me at this committee meeting said the strength coach got on the phone, and his words basically were, that guy was an idiot. How do I defend that?
Right.
How do I defend that? Or if I sit in a meeting and they say, well, you know, do you guys have CEUs? One does, one doesn't. Now we're changing that. We've got to be more professional. We've got to present ourselves as professionals and not, you know, there's a drill sergeant part to all of us.
Right.
There's some things we have that we do to you know, it's just like being in practice.
Right.
But by the same token, if we present ourselves as a professional first and we're doing things in a well thought out manner, and you're not putting kids in danger, you get a lot greater reputation than you do than, you know, that's the ogre strength coach. All he does is beat our kids up. We've right. got to become more professional. And I think that movement has come a long, long, long way in a positive fashion in the last 4 or 5 years. We just got to keep doing it and keep turning the pages of the calendar, and I think we'll be in good shape.
No doubt.
We want the results that are going to happen in 10 years in the next 10 days. That's just the way we work.
You know, I mean, you hit it right on the head, and something that we've stressed on the show quite a bit is being involved. you know, and being involved and you know, so when those emails come out about, hey, I'm Scott Bennett, I'm going to I'm representing us to to the safeguards committee, what are some thoughts? What are, you know, what's your opinions on this? Yeah. We need to not delete those. We need to respond. I mean, I just did it for NSCA. And it's the last thing we're all time constrained. We all have families. We all, you know, and it's tough. And it's the last thing we want to do. Last thing I want to do is go throw. I got into coaching because I like wearing gym shorts and a t-shirt. Last thing I want to do is throw a polo on and some khakis and go out and talk to some administrators that have no clue about what we do. But that's also part of the process of being professional and educating them as to what we do. You know, and the more that you can get in front of them, the better. I'd make the same recommendation, you know, at your universities. Nobody wants to do it, but it needs to be done. You know, go set up a meeting, you know, a quarterly meeting with your direct supervisor, you know, an assistant AD or an associate AD or the SWA. And just, you know, go up there and present, you know, four times a year. And that would make a difference as well. So,
you know, one thing that we've done here, and it hadn't gotten the legs yet that we wanted to, because, you know, again, we're all understaffed and trying to do our job. But I've said this in front of the business meeting too, is at your own university, set up your own performance committee with your athletic trainer, with your strength coach, with your SWA, with your compliance director. We even are including our facilities guy here, you know, so he understands, you know, the cleanliness the training room has to be, why we do things, why we set things up in the weight room, what, you know, can it be cleaned at certain hours. Add a couple of SAC representatives, so you got your student athlete voice. Then you have everybody at the same table. You're getting feedback from your student athletes about, you know, their impressions of what your product is. Mm-hmm. And then you in turn says, no, you understand, we don't push you out of the weight room because we don't like you. Your time is limited because you've only got, you know, 20 hours or 8 hours. We've got to get these people in. They understand then what you're doing in a much less formal conversation. And then in turn, you get, so, okay, I understand that, you know, they feel like they're getting neglected. Let's make sure we go back and give them the attention that they, because that's, you know, as well as I do, in athletics, perception is reality. Nope. So if they perceive it as a bad situation is very real to them. Right. I've gotten some emails from some strength coaches across the country that have implemented this committee, and they've had a lot of success with it. What it does is it opens up in front of everybody the conversations of, here's what we need to be doing to better things for our student athletes. And our area as strength coaches is a huge, huge area. But then your SWA or your faculty athletic rep can hear it. Right. And they may even throw some feedback your way. Gosh, you know, with my blinders on, I never saw it. But it opens up those communication lines. I think this is critical too, and I've told coaches this. If you as a strength coach bring this idea to the table, it shows your level of professionalism, your level of commitment to better the department, and your level of commitment to help the student athlete with all the heavy hitters that are involved in the student athlete's everyday activities. Right. It's a win-win.
Well, in a lot of schools, you know, or not in a lot of schools, a few schools and a lot of the Olympic programs have gone to that high performance manager type of concept, and that's that is. But I like that. I really like the inclusion of the student athletes, the SAC representative.
Well, there are two SAC representatives on the safeguards committee.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. You know, in these shows, I always get some recommendations. Give us a quote that you live by or that you have plastered in your weight room somewhere.
Yeah, we've got several plastered in this weight room. I'm a quote freak, but you know, the biggest one that I like right now is, you know, every year our department comes up with some little slogan or something. This year it was "Will to Win." And one of my all-time favorites, because it just, to me, it just embodies the strength coach. The will to win is nothing without the will to prepare. Mm-hmm. Now, how many times have you seen, you know, one of your players that didn't quite give you all he wanted? He's just crying his eyes out at the end of a game because you lost. And you think, you know what, buddy? If you'd have given him just a little bit more investment, maybe we wouldn't be crying right now.
No doubt.
So the will to win is nothing without the will to prepare. I think that one's a pretty good one. And we get a lot of mileage out of it here.
Give us a book recommendation.
You know I can't read. You know, I don't do
book
a lot of
reading. Yeah.
Well, we talked about this off camera a little bit. I've done so much inheriting and so much building of programs. I've started over at a grassroots level so many times, I haven't had time to get what I would call creative. But as far as my, one of my favorite books that I read was The Science and Practice of Strength Training, the old Zatziorski book.
Yep.
Because there are a few chapters in there, and I talked about this with my track coach one day. You read those chapters, you really got to want it. you got to go back and reread those bad boys a few times. But it fits into some of the things that we talked about years ago in some NSCA journal columns was about, you know, when does a kid get strong enough? You know, when does, you know, if you got a receiver that can squat 500, does he need to squat 550?
Right.
You know, it gets into some of that stuff. It gets into what I call kind of some common sense training activities. You know, and you piddle around with some of the Mel Siff stuff, and you go visit Louie, and you know, you listen to your show, and you catch up on YouTube. You know, that book stuff, I'm not going to say it doesn't exist. You know, the information availability now is so much different than it used to be.
Right.
And our time demands are so. If anybody ever gets a chance to go to the Juniata College Strength Clinic in the summer, it's fantastic.
Yeah, they do a great job.
Fantastic. And sitting there talking to those guys out there, and you know, we're in shorts and flip flops, nobody's got their peacock feathers up, and I told them, I said, I really appreciate all you young guys doing all this scientific research, because you'll come tell me about it, and I don't have to read a book.
That's right.
but I'll be honest with you, that's where right now, if I've got a problem, I'll call somebody that I remember talking about that problem. And I said, "How'd you fix that?" Okay, good. See you. Bye. I gotta go.
Yeah. Right. That's networking. I think you're absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons why I do the show, because of networking, but also, and opening it up to everybody else. But you're right. I mean, that's exactly what that power right there. And you know it. I've called you several times. Hey, I'm having this issue. What do you think? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, the supple leopard's gotten a lot of headlines here of late, and I've tried to start it two or three times and get cut off. But I think there's some take home points that I've heard in that book that are really good. A lot of the motion stuff or the movement tests, I'm not well versed on it enough to know. All I know is I got a kid that's got to get strong in 6 months. I got to go.
Right.
I got to go.
No, I hear you. All right, so then, you know, websites or, you know, app recommendations, you know, technology, what are some of the things that you check out?
I am a low-tech redneck, Ronnie. I've got no apps, but I'm kind of like you guys talked. I think it was Tommy talked about a while back. I get on YouTube all the time.
Yeah.
Because I want to watch what those guys are talking about. I want to see it. Mm-hmm. And I try to surf a little bit on university websites, people that will put stuff up. You know, Alan Hedrick does a great job out at CSU Pueblo, putting stuff up on Facebook all the time. And I like watching a lot. I love what Alan does out there. But really, a lot of the YouTube stuff is just phone calls or a text from somebody. You know, Greg Werner's really good about, hey, I saw this. Take a look at it. Tell me what you think.
Right.
He's really good on that kind of stuff. And that's right. That's as far as my technology will take me.
Right. Well, you know, social media is a huge tool, that Facebook or text. You know, all the different ways to stay connected with people, and it's so much easier to share information now. You know, and that's
it is.
You're right, and that's but having that network of coaches and that group of people that you can reach out to that are kind of constantly and encouraging each other, your network, whatever that may be, to share information, I think is critical. Right.
And you know, back in the early 90s when I started in this, there were a lot of old strength coaches that were not too willing to share ideas.
No, you're right.
Everybody held their cards really close to the vest. Now, I'm not going to say everybody opens their book for you, but there's a whole lot more open conversations of sharing ideas, sharing what works, talking about it. Here's what we did. Here's the results I got from it. There's a lot more of that going on now than it was 20 years ago.
No doubt. Well, you've been a good friend, man, to me through the years, and
both and ways.
It's been a great conversation. I think a lot of takeaways there, and I, you know, the one that I took away the most was that sack representative. I think that's a great takeaway there. But I appreciate you coming on the show, man.
I appreciate you, partner. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. With a fantastic strength coach. Appreciate Scott being on the show. If you would join me on the website, ronmckeefery.com, ronmckeefery.com, and in the comments section, let Scott know that you appreciate him being on the show. Give me some feedback on the show, maybe make some recommendations on guests, those types of things. I want to make that as interactive as possible. While you're there, sign up for my mailing list so that way you get updates each week with the episode so you don't forget. It's a reminder. It's a nice little reminder. And you get a free ebook of some quotes and things like that for doing so. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel so that you get those updates there as well. Last thing, I want to make sure that I point out strength-ondemand.com. It's a product that Rob Taylor and myself put together. It's basically an online clinic archive of different clinic presentations from various clinics across the country. And you can watch it, you know, on pretty much any device, you know, iPad, iPhone, computer, whatever. And so it's a nice little thing to have from a continuing education standpoint to be able to continue to learn from some of the greats. So make sure you check that out, strength-ondemand, and make sure you come back next week for another great episode. We'll talk to you later. Take care.